Welcome to the Walk On Mentality Podcast, where we discuss topics from walk-on stories and what it means to have a walk-on mentality, to entrepreneurship, to business, to fitness, mental health, and more. I'm your host, Jackson Mitchell, founder of Walk On Mentality Health, and I created this podcast to positively impact listeners through sharing inspirational stories and other thought-provoking content. If you enjoy the show, please share it with a friend. The goal is to positively impact as many people as possible. Thanks for tuning in. This episode of the Walk On Mentality Podcast is brought to you by Good Wolf Provisions. Are you ready to take your health and wellness journey to the next level? If so, look no further than Good Wolf Provisions, your partner in holistic, athletic nutrition. Good Wolf believes that true well-being encompasses more than just physical fitness. It's about nurturing your mind, body, and soul to achieve peak human performance. Their provisions range from the mushroom-powered Dawn Patrol superfoods, which go perfect in your morning coffee or post-workout smoothie, to whey protein, creatine, and even CoQ10 to help you stay focused and energized throughout the day. As part of the Walk On Mentality community, you get an exclusive perk. Head over to goodwolfprovisions.com to explore their offerings and treat yourself to a healthier journey. Use code MENTALITY at checkout and you'll unlock a fantastic 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and I can't wait to hear what you think about the supplements. Remember, no limits. If you're like me, you like to train hard. And if you train hard, it's incredibly important that you take the time to prioritize rest and recovery so that you can come back better. And one of the ways I set myself up to come back better is by rocking the Kane Revive. The Kane Revive is designed to stimulate recovery from the ground up, created for moments of athletic transition, made to support and renew the feet before and after workouts. Kane is made with Bounce Back Foam, a breakthrough biofoam created from sustainable Brazilian sugar cane. The shoes are odor and bacteria resistant, quick drying, and ultra durable. They were developed in partnership with Dr. Daniel Geller, an authority in the treatment of foot and ankle injuries in elite runners, cyclists, and triathletes. Head to the link in the show notes to support the Walk On Mentality podcast and get yourself a pair. Come back better. Are you tired of feeling like your clothes are too tight, uncomfortable, or never your size? What about feeling like you never have the right apparel for the various occasions that you're doing on a month-to-month basis? At the end of the day, you look good, you feel good, and you feel good, you play good. And that's in every area of your life. And if that resonates with you, look no further. I'd like to introduce you to the Roan Commuter Collection. Roan's Commuter Collection is flexible and breathable. There's a product for every occasion. Mobility is everything, and it makes looking good easy. Not to mention, with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology, you never have to worry about your pits reeking. If any of that resonated with you, then my friend, you are in the right place. The Commuter Collection can get you through any workday and straight into whatever comes next. So head to roan.com/mentality and use promo code MENTALITY to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to roane.com/mentality and use code MENTALITY. It's time to find your office comfort. And here we go. Welcome to the show, Keith Mitchart. Appreciate you for joining me, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was just reading an article about the Hill Country 100, and something stuck out to me. The quote is, "Before this 100K, I knew there was a lesson I was being called to learn, a journey I was meant to go on, a glimpse of enlightenment that I was meant to see that would impact me now and long after I leave this existence. I planned the Hill Country 100 with the intention to heed the call, to live the experience, to prove to myself that I could, to meet my limit and make it watch as I ran past, to inspire, to move something from the conceptual to the actual by means of my own action." That's powerful. Are you a writer?
So I do enjoy writing. I try to journal on the daily, whether it's like just writing down a quote that stuck out to me or just stream of consciousness, getting some thoughts down, whether it's personal, spiritual, business related, whatever that may be, or just kind of playing around, writing down some thoughts that cross my mind, just in terms of like life, like setting down little, like, not rules, but just like, if you've ever read the Matthew McConaughey book, Green Lights, he calls them bumper stickers, like just those little one-liners that are like, damn, all right, that hits. So that's kind of the extent to my writing. My friend Keaton did help me kind of spruce that article up a little bit. So I won't take all the credit for it. She's an extremely talented writer as well. And a lot of the more colorful imagery does come from her in that article. But all the concept was from me. But yeah, I can't take full credit for that one. She's a talented, talented writer.
Yeah, well, the article is awesome. And, you know, you and I chatted about the journey a little bit. And I would love to know, like, you know, you talk about heeding that call. What do you think sparked that call in your life?
Yeah. I don't know. I've said this before to my friends, but I've always, like, as long as I can remember, I've kind of had that attitude of like just kind of feeling a little bit different from most people, just thinking about life differently. Like, I can remember back to like second grade saying like, yeah, I don't think I'll ever have the picket fence house with the two kids and the one dog, like type of lifestyle. And so I feel like for me, I've always felt ever since then that there was like a call for me to do something different and, you know, off the beaten path. And so I feel like it's kind of been like this lifetime call, and then it's just been reinforced at multiple points along the way. And it's always like adapting, you know, as life changes and moves from place to place. But yeah, it's just, I feel like there's always been a call for me, and I've just been chasing it ever since I was young. And, you know, I definitely don't think I'm even still close to finding out what that true call is, but it's all just been part of the process that's brought me to where I'm at on the journey right now. So yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, there's definitely something to that. And I'm curious, I mean, this goes back all the way to second grade. So let's go back to your childhood. I mean, did you grow up with the white picket fence and you felt like you wanted to experience something different, or what was your upbringing like?
I feel like I had a pretty interesting childhood. I started out like it was a great childhood. Like, I had mom and dad had a nice little house out in Dripping Springs, had some land that I could roam around on, ride my bike on, hurt myself on, all the good things that helps a young man develop. And then as far as like growing up in Dripping Springs, it was very like a kind of suburban spot, just, you know, three elementary schools, everyone played football, everyone knew each other, all that good stuff. Couldn't walk into HEB downtown without spending 20 minutes talking to somebody. And it was all just like a very kind of like a bubble type of society where it's just like, you exist here, you're very protected from the outside world, and everyone kind of thinks the same, acts the same. We all end up going to the same colleges and all that stuff. And a lot of like, basically I felt like I was kind of always like existing in that world, but kind of being on the outside of it, because I lived a little bit outside of town and my family wasn't like the typical suburban family. Like, my dad was a, like, spent his 20s and 30s riding motorcycles, playing in rock bands, like getting in all sorts of trouble, and then like eventually turned it around and started his own engineering company, Mitch Hart Engineering. And then my mom was kind of the same way, spent a lot of her younger life being like a very rebellious person and always going against the grain and kind of carving her own way in life. And so I basically had like, my two parents were people who had taken a totally alternative route to life, but still like ended up with that kind of picture perfect home at the end of the ride, or not even at the end of it, but along the ride. So yeah, I feel like, and then with that, my dad was always playing guitars at the house. We were always going and riding on his motorcycles. He'd take us on long, like multi-state road trips, like just riding on the back of his motorcycle and all that. So I feel like I kind of had an alternative childhood. Like, my mom loved to paint. She loved to draw, do all that stuff. So I was in a very creative household while still existing in like a very structured, part of Austin. So it was interesting. So I feel like I always kind of felt like I stood out, and like nobody really skateboarded or rode dirt bikes or anything like that where I was from. And so I was kind of the only person doing that. So mm-hmm. if you're the only person doing that, you're kind of spending a lot of time by yourself, just like doing what you want to do, as opposed to everyone else who's just kind of doing the usual suburb, like playing pickup basketball, going to the pool, whatnot.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of always felt a little bit separated, but football was kind of the thing that always kept me in the mix of the whole suburban lifestyle.
Yeah, so you kind of saw like this. It's interesting, as I hear you talk, I hear like you saw a lot of probably like people doing really well in this kind of traditional path, so to speak. But then you also saw your parents who were kind of the opposite of the prototypical Dripping Springs mom and dad, who at least yeah. as far as you knew in terms of like, you know, my dad was in rock bands and rode motorcycles and my mom was an artist. But to your point, they still were able to provide and create a safe place for you. And do you have siblings?
Yeah, I've got two sisters as well, one older, one younger.
Yeah, so they still created that safe environment for you and your sisters, even though they were kind of like off the beaten path a little bit in their journey. That kind of opened up your mind to like, huh, maybe there's more possible. Maybe there's more I could do, and like maybe wanting to like tap into that a little bit more.
Definitely. I mean, I think it just like opened me up to a lot of different experiences that a lot of the kids that I was surrounded by with, I think, didn't have access to. Like every summer I got to go to an art camp for like 6 weeks out in bee caves and, you know, those cross country road trips on the back of a motorcycle, like doing some cool shit for a 9 year old, getting to experience a lot of different things. My dad, like me, my dad and my little sister at one point had a band that we put together. My dad was lead guitarist, lead singer. Little sister played guitar and sang as well. And then I played electric bass and did not sing at all. And like we would take that and go out once a month and go to the nursing home out in Dripping Springs. And like we performed for them, just playing like gospel music and stuff. And my dad was always this like very interesting mix of like just like very involved in the church, like turned his life around, found the church and like was very involved, played in one of the church bands, like all that kind of stuff, always volunteering, all kind, like he was part of a organization called Kairos, which is prison ministry. So he would go into different prisons around Central Texas or around the area and perform and like play music for them. And like a lot of the dudes who I went in there, like he wrote pretty much all the way up until the day he died. And wow. Then on the other side of that was like his wild 20s and 30s, like being an alcoholic, drug addict, essentially just riding motorcycles, getting in all sorts of trouble. And like that never really leaves you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like when he was, while playing in the church band, he was still playing in like the honky tonk band at a bar on a Saturday night, he'd be playing at the church band the next morning. And like, so I just, and a lot of times, like I would just be going to these gigs with them and hanging out. So we'd go from the honky tonk gig on a Saturday to the church gig on Sunday. And like, it was, I was just witnessing him like have these two sides to him that created the whole person that he was, that like was a really great dad and a great person for a lot of people. And so that was like the example that I had was like, he wasn't like a one-sided person. It wasn't just like go to work, come home, eat dinner, do all that, like take me to my football practice. He had like this whole other life of his own while still being a father.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. And it's a powerful reminder that like, you know, we have the opportunity to kind of like create whatever life we want to live, in that we're not, I don't think we were designed to fit in a box.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. If you just don't allow yourself to get boxed in by any like one specific aspect of your identity, then you can have like all these different things that you love to do. And like, you come in and out of playing the guitar, riding the motorcycle, working on your business, blah, blah, blah. And it just like allows you to create a balanced lifestyle as opposed to, you know, just being so one-sided in one area of life.
Right. What about your mom? Share a little bit about your mom.
I mean, my mom's like, she's, yeah, same deal. Like, was a very like rebellious person in her younger age. Like, has told us many times. She was like, when I was in my 20s, I was like, I'm never fucking having kids. And then now she's like, being a mother is like her whole world, and she loves it, and like has had that transition. But she was a very like wild, rebellious soul, and again, like, that never really left her. Like, she was just a badass. And then she was a labor and delivery nurse. She did that for 25 years, just seeing in downtown Austin, just seeing the wildest shit. Like, you know, she'd come home from a 12-hour shift, and it was either a really great day or like, you know, she was getting like clawed at by like crackheads that were having a baby, like doing all this stuff. They're having to like strap them down and all that. So like, my mom was, she's a gangster for sure. Yeah. She can hold her own in any situation. And then now she's since retired from being a active labor and delivery nurse, and she's now teaching nursing up in Michigan at Michigan State.
Oh, sweet.
But she's a feisty old woman.
So for sure. where do you put yourself on the spectrum of like, you know, kind of how you described your pops to like, you know, the word gangster comes to mind for how you describe your mom. Like, where do you think you are on the spectrum of your parents?
That's a good question. I feel like I'm more like my dad. I'm a little more settled in a lot of instances and just like very calm. But then I share a lot of his like rebellious soul. Like, love the creative aspect of everything. I love drawing, writing, painting, all sorts of that stuff. And so I don't know. I feel like I'm a really solid mix between the two. And like, both of them are the most loving, caring parents you could ask for. But they both just kind of carry themselves differently. My mom's a little snappier.
So you grow up in Drip, you know, go through that journey. Did you end up going to college, or what did life look like when it came time to kind of leave the nest?
Yeah. So basically, how I kind of tell the story is like, when I was like, basically till about 13 years old, I was in very creative household, all that stuff. I was living like a very creative kind of alternative life, skateboarding, but all along the way, football was kind of the main priority just because I was really good. Mm-hmm. And 13, when you get to like high school age and you start playing for the school, or not 13, but around that age where you start playing for the school, and people start telling you like, oh, like, you can get a scholarship at this, like, you need to like put all your energy into this and all that. So I just kind of like halted anything and everything that wasn't football from the time I was like 12 or 13 and going forward. So my whole life was pretty much just football year round, whether it was the fall football season or 7-on-7 or summer workouts or like all that. It was all just football all the time, playing on select teams and all that. And basically it was just all consuming until the point where I was about 17 years old. At that point, my dad had passed. I had developed a little bit of a rebellious attitude in the football program and was very like just not super bought in at that point, and was feeling myself just lose the passion for playing football. Mm-hmm. Still playing and everything, and then just always having problems with the coaches, wanting to do my own shit, not listen to what they're telling me and just kind of being that rebellious 17-year-old kid that we all are at some point.
Right.
And was just like kind of trying to get back to like drawing a little bit and all that stuff, but kind of was just living the football lifestyle of like you practice 5 days a week, you play game once a week, you go out and party afterwards, and then you do it all over again. And then just coming into my senior year, we were going through off season. And I was like, fuck this, dude. Like, I'm not going to play college ball. Like, I'm a 6 foot tight end, like 6 foot, 190 pound tight end. Like, nobody's picking me up.
Right.
I was just like, I feel like I'm just going to say fuck it and quit my senior year. And so I basically kind of made up my mind. And then a bunch of my buddies kind of came to me and basically told me, like, dude, if you quit for senior year, like, you're fucking us over. Like, we've all like worked so hard for this. Like, we have a chance to go deep into the playoffs. Like, don't quit. Like, that just screws all of us over. So I was like, all right, you're right. Like, that would be kind of fucked. So played my senior year. We went to like the second round of the playoffs, ended up losing. And then at that point on, I was like, cool, football's over. Like, I'm going, at that point I was going to Texas State just to be a student. And yeah, that basically started this whole journey into just being an absolutely lost little boy who just was pissed off at the world and had no idea what he wanted to do with his life. And yeah, I went off to college just kind of pissed off at the world, just wanting to do the typical party. Like, I joined a frat, partied a bunch, chased chicks, all that stuff, and just like leaned into that lifestyle really, really hard for the first semester that I was at Texas State. And like found myself just like, what am I doing?
Right.
Like, my grades were shit, all that. I was gonna have to retake a bunch of classes the next semester. I had to call my mom and tell her all that, and she's disappointed as hell in me, like all that. So just feeling all that, feeling just completely unfulfilled from what I had been pursuing. And then basically just kind of getting to that point where I was kind of at my rock bottom, I guess. Like, that was my rock bottom. I remember sitting on a balcony out in San Marcos, drunk, just like crying to one of my friends about like calling my mom and telling her that I'm failing all my classes. And woke up the next morning extremely hungover and was just like, all right, like, this shit's got to change. And so basically finished up the first semester, came into Christmas break, just kind of isolated myself, went home, and basically decided, like, all right, I'm going to drop the fraternity, basically completely go sober for the next however long, and then, like, I'm going to find a job and just start working, like, making some money. So I got a job at a bar in San Marcos. At
great 19 starting years, point.
As a fucking door guy. at 19 years old. So went into that, was still not drinking at all, was smoking weed from time to time, and just was like very, very focused, like pretty much worked at the bar Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sometimes on Sunday, classes pretty much 8 a.m. Monday through Friday, and just like grinding it out. Came back at the end of that next semester, had made dean's list, was still pretty much sober besides the weed. And then was like, had picked up a second job coming into the summer and was like feeling like I was finally like getting some stable ground beneath my feet. Mm-hmm. And at that point, like, I was working out again. I was extremely disciplined in that. I was just like redeveloping the discipline that I had as a younger kid when that was forced on me, and now like holding myself accountable going forward. And came into the summer, worked my ass off full-time at a warehouse job in Dripping Springs, was still working 3 days a week at the bar in San Marcos, living at home, just stacking cash, like pretty much didn't have any time for anything or anyone that wasn't these jobs that I was working. And so just went through the whole summer like that, stacked up some good cash, and then was coming into my first semester at Texas State, no longer in the dorms, but in a house. And so I had signed a lease when I was still in the fraternity with a bunch of older dudes in the frat for the following fall. And then in that time had dropped the fraternity, pretty much like stopped talking to most of these dudes and then like gone sober, right, essentially. And then like completely isolated from that world. It's like come fall or come start of the semester, like you're living with those guys again in a house with four other dudes. So I was like really nervous coming into that. That was around the time that I got my dog here behind me. And like, I'd always wanted my own dog. We had always had dogs growing up, but it was also kind of like, all right, if I have a dog, like that forces me to continue to stay disciplined. Like I can't be out at the bar while he's home by himself. Like it's gonna like force some well-needed structure coming into that situation. And yeah, basically just like was able to kind of skirt around any type of partying and all that. Still just working a few days at the bar each week. And yeah, just actually handling my shit for the first time in a while. And then that basically brings us up like, and I was getting back into reading. I was getting back into writing. I was trying to draw some, I was trying to get into some more creative outlets. And then fast forward, like that year goes by pretty uneventful. Coming into my junior year, I'm now living farther off campus in a little 3-bedroom house with a little yard, two of my good buddies. So it was like coming into a much better situation living wise. Mm-hmm. And still at this point, I was kind of like, you know, I was still doing, working out, school, working, like doing everything that I could. And then still staying sober, but at this point, you know, having a beer from time to time. Because mm-hmm. I don't like think I was ever really like an alcoholic, but I do know that I have just genetically from my father, like, and my mom too. Like she, yeah, like I have a predisposition to have like a heavy dependence on substances.
Yeah.
So always cognizant of that. But at this point I felt pretty comfortable just having a beer from time to time, doing all that stuff, still smoking weed, but you know, just living my normal life, like walking my dog a few times each day, taking him on hikes, working out, school, work, all that stuff.
Right.
And then,
So this is your junior year at this point, right?
Yeah. Junior year at college and getting heavy into reading. I'm starting to read like Buddhist scriptures and just like a lot of philosophical stuff, Ryan Holiday, all his books on stoicism and all that, and just like really kind of going deep on my kind of journey of self-improvement, just like from the inside and out, writing a lot more, reading a shit ton, and really just like kind of completely opening up my perspective on life and just like taking control of every single action throughout the day, or taking responsibility, and then just taking more control of my life with the decisions I was making going forward. At the time I was in school to be a registered dietitian. I wanted to work with athletes, and at this point they were like, there's no fucking way you're going to get to work with athletes. That's like 1% of registered dietitians. The rest of us are going to be working in hospitals, and you are too. And I was like, well, I don't want to work in a hospital designing menus for all kinds of different, like it was a mess, dude. Like that sounds like such a, like, it's just not the job for me type of deal.
Yeah.
And so I'm starting to realize that like I'm coming into this phase and I'm like, I basically am just fueled by, at this point in my life, fueled by not wanting to be a loser. And so I'm doing school and just like, this is what I'm doing. Like I've changed my major twice. Like I've had to retake classes. Like I picked this one. I'm going to stick with it to the end. Like I'm going to graduate. Like I can't drop out. And then everything just like going forward, just like it was not making sense for me to stay in this major, stay like the course. But the whole time I'm kind of like fueled by that little voice in my head that's like, okay, fuck that. I'm going to get to work with athletes like 100%. Like, mm-hmm. You're not going to stick me in a hospital. Like, these guys might end up in a hospital, but me, I'm going to work with athletes.
Right.
So still kind of fueled by that, but starting to realize like, dude, the path to that is like, it's going to be a long and tough path. And so just starting to have doubts pop up about like what I'm doing in college and the career path I'm pursuing. And then, so go through junior year, I'm still just getting ready, coming into senior year, still working at, or at this point I was no longer working at the bars, but just going to school. And then came into that summer and I was like, okay, I want to start my personal training company. Because I basically, in that house, we had had a garage and I built a little gym in there, threw a bunch of kettlebells in there, TR expands, all that. Mm-hmm. And I was having like all my buddies come through for workouts and I'm putting like, to the point where I'm like writing in the workout of the day on the fucking dry erase board and dudes are just coming by and typing in the code. So I'm like, all right, like, I should start training some people. And so basically I just worked a little manual labor job that summer. Once again, just like, you know, 7 a.m. to around 3 or 4 p.m. in the afternoon, just like out in the heat, shoveling rocks, digging holes, like just doing anything you can think of. It's just like hard manual labor out in the Texas heat, but I'm making really good money. And it's all just to save up to buy the equipment that I needed and all that to start my little training company. And the mm-hmm. idea was it was just going to be my side hustle as I came in through senior year. You can make some good money doing it. So I was like, oh, that'll be the perfect like supplemental income while I'm still in school, finishing up this degree. And then go through about half the summer, I worked at that job, finally had the money I needed, quit that job, and just started doing the training stuff full time. And when I say full time, I mean, that was the only thing I was doing, but I didn't have any clients. So I was just like trying to figure out ways to like bring in clients. Money's slowly starting to dwindle down. And then I had grabbed coffee with an old high school teacher I'd had. And we caught up. She had been a personal trainer for years and years and years. And so I was like, hey, I'm starting this little like training company. Would love to chat with you and just kind of get some advice. So we went and grabbed coffee. And then like a month later, she hits me up. And she's like, hey, give me a call when you get a chance. Like, got something exciting for you. I was like, oh, maybe she found me a client. Like, that was sick. Because at this point, I've got like one client. It's mom's friend. It's just like, yeah. So it was not going well at that point. But again, like, this is just supposed to be a little slide hustle. Like, I wasn't really tripping about it. But I was trying to get some clients and all that. And then she calls me and she starts telling me about a doctor's office in Dripping Springs, who it's a private doctor's office. She knows the head physician there. It's like a preventative, holistic kind of healthcare center. And he's looking for a personal trainer to bring onto his staff. And I was like, that would be amazing. So I went, met the doctor. It's Code One Concierge out in Dripping Springs. And doctor's just a rad dude. He's ex-Marine, very like kind of in the same mindset as I am, just works out, wants to like actually help people make the lifestyle changes, not just prescribe pills and do procedures. Right. So we hit it off really well and ended up, he contracted out my company. And then at that point, I'm the only trainer for his entire clinic, basically. Yeah. And so now he's referring all of his patients to me. And I started to really gain some traction training. And I realized, like, I started doing some math. And I was like, damn, I could actually make, like, you know, 80, 90 grand a year, like, if I really grind it out here. And so I was like, shit, like, if I could make 80, 90 grand a year, maybe, that would be plenty to at least like get me started on doing like some other things. And so now I'm kind of having these thoughts of like, and again, like I'm reading all this stoicism, taking control of your future, all that good stuff. And it's just like really fueling this like desire to break away from kind of what I had accepted as was the path and do my own thing. And so coming into the fall, school starts, I'm balancing like 7 clients at the time on top of school. Organic chemistry, lab, microbiology lab. I think it was like advanced anatomy that had a 3-hour lab. Like, I'm just like loaded up, still like doing my clients. And then also at this point, trying to like get into Austin more to network as a trainer. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really like just basically school is just getting put on the back burner at this point.
Right.
Like I'm putting a whole lot into it. And so we're 3 weeks into the semester, fucking failing all of those classes after like making dean's list like multiple times all the semesters previous to that. And so I'm like, okay, clearly like I'm not really wanting to do this, but I gotta make a decision. Like we got the first round of tests coming up. Like it's either like I fucking buckle down and grind this out this semester, or like I'm gonna have to go full on into this training. And I just realized like, all right, this is the moment where you kind of decide. And so I just called my mom and was like, hey mom, I think I want to drop out of college. And like she, you know, much to like my blessing, she's the most supportive and like amazing mother you could ask for, like in every step of the way. So I got really lucky. She was like, okay, I told her my plan, like I'm gonna start this company, I see this future, blah blah blah, this will do that, that'll do that, and line it all out for her. She was basically like, okay, like I can tell you put a lot of thought into this, like if you're feeling like this is what you need to do, like I support you. So I dropped out that day.
Wow.
Dropped out that day and basically was like, okay, I'm full-time doing this training stuff now. And so starting to pour all of my energy into that. And like, I'm a very sentimental type of person. And like, this was a huge shift for me, like, you know, putting my application to drop out and like, you know, start crying for 30, 40 minutes, all that good stuff. Just like, you know, fueled by the tears, but also like, holy fuck, what am I doing? And so just all of that, all of the emotions are going to dropping out. And still being fueled by like, all right, I don't want to be a loser. That doesn't mean I got to finish college, but I still don't want to be a fucking loser. And so just kind of all of that coming into play. And then the next day I went, and so at the time when I was in school, we talked about this the other day, I was starting this sleeve on my arm and I had it finished like way up here, like a few inches off the wrist, because I was like, shit, if I do end up having to work in hospitals, like I'm gonna have to cover this all the time, I gotta make it manageable. Mm-hmm. So that was another like way that I saw I was giving someone who wasn't myself power over what I did with my life.
Right.
If you're gonna think what's on my skin, like I don't feel like I have a whole lot of authority over myself at that point. And so basically to kind of like solidify that, and as an act of kind of like burning the bridges, like there's no going back, this is the path now. The day after I dropped out, I went and got this tattooed on my hand. It says create your own reality. And basically just like following that to my heart and just like, okay, every single action of every single day compounds to create the future that I'm living in 6 months. So like, that is what I'm focused on. Like take control of every single aspect of your life, take responsibility for everything, and move forward and create the reality that you want to create. And so basically just like taking that momentum and going into the next few months. And like since then, dude, it's been just a wild run. Like it's hard. I think that was like two and a half years ago, maybe 2.5 maybe. But like looking at everything that's come since then has been insane. Like it's been, once again, just adapting at every turn, changing. And like now I'm getting to the point where like I'm kind of outgrowing the training business because of what it's led me to with the ultra running, the nonprofit, and everything else involved. And so it's like, it's, yeah, I just am reflecting on like the past 2.5 years after that, like deciding factor. And it's just like, fuck, dude, I'm so happy I did that.
Yeah.
It's been such a crazy and awesome like roller coaster since then. And like, I feel like that was what gave me like all the power to come into the person that I'm still trying to become. But I'm like, I'm happy with where I'm at right now for sure. And I definitely wouldn't be where I'm at right now if it wasn't for that moment. And then just like really just leaning into just that act of creating your own reality.
Yeah, it's incredible what's possible when you decide to take control. I mean, to your point, you could have very easily let the registered dietitian role at the hospital be your ceiling and be, you know, what you thought was the best possible job or opportunity that you could get. But you felt like, nah, there's more for me.
Well, looking back on that, it's like, okay, what was I chasing in that? Like, I was chasing a secure future, a future where you're always going to have a job, you're going to get salary, you're gonna like, you know, benefits, all that stuff. Like it's a very secure future. And I realized like if you want to experience like a really enriching and like crazy life and just like live it for what it could be, like none of that's secure. And right. The reality is like even that future is not secure. Like you can get laid off at any moment. You can spend your whole life working a job you hate. You can get hit by a bus on a Tuesday and have never done anything that you actually wanted to do. And so I just kind of like just made the decision to stop living scared, or at least not being scared, but living in spite of the fear, like even when it is hard and when you are scared, moving forward. And yeah, just took that and ran with it. And there's a quote by, Hunter S. Thompson. I think I was sharing it with you the other day, but it's says, how much do you value your freedom? Would you trade it for some illusion of security? Freedom is something that dies unless it is used. And that quote really sticks with me because the wording of illusion of security, I think really hits because that's really all it is. Like, and I'm sure you've heard it from friends this past year, you can get laid off at the drop of a pen these sure. days. And, you know, they give you, we appreciate you, here's your package, like, and see you later. So like none of what you think is secure anyways, so why not just like live an unsecure life doing what you actually want to do?
Right. Yeah. Cool. Man, I love it. I love the whole journey, the whole story. And you're so right, man. Security is an illusion and it's dark, but you literally could get hit by a bus in 15 minutes.
Well, so that was another big transformation kind of in that whole journey, especially with the Ryan Holiday books and the whole concept of memento mori and just like really like, you know, changing your outlook on death and like one, not ignoring it because it is going to end one day. And like, I don't know what comes after, but I know that I'm here right now and like, what can I do to create some experiences and memories that like are going to make this worth living essentially? It's just, and so basically just kind of basing my actions off of that concept as well. It's like, I don't care what anyone thinks about me because they're going to die and I'm going to die. I don't care. Like we're all going to die. So we might as well do some cool shit while we're here, you know? So kind of using death as like that motivating factor of like, what do you want to experience with this one life that you've been given? And I'm like, damn, I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do that. And when you start lining that out, a lot of that's not really a lot of that doesn't go well with a typical 9-to-5 lifestyle. You know?
Right. So kind of speaking about some of those things that you want to live out while you're here, I mean, more recently than anything else, you've done the big three, and you kind of alluded to this journey and how it led you to ultra running and these other things. So remind me, what do you call the trio that you just did? And then like dive into the process of creating what that was.
So we titled it the Just Fucking Run Project. It's a 3-part documentary about some rogue solo 100Ks that I did this past summer. We just wrapped the last one up about a month ago yesterday, actually. So that was a collection of different 100K runs. For anyone not familiar with that conversion rate, it's 62 miles. I did 3 of those throughout the summer, the first one being in April, second one being in June, third one we just wrapped up here at the end of August. I guess to kind of jump into it, just kind of laying that background of what I was telling you, I had essentially turned myself into a runner in like under a year. I had found a lot of like release in running when I was still in school, just for stress and anxiety and all that stuff. But I was just running a few times each week, doing a few miles on the trails and really getting a lot of good release out of it, but not, you know, taking it seriously, not ever really training, just enjoying it, being out in nature and getting sweaty and doing all that stuff. So doing that, I was back in college, putting a few runs together a week, ended up trying to train for a marathon in like a month's notice, wrecked my Achilles, like strained the hell out of it. Didn't quite tear it, but like it put me down. And basically after that, I was like, well, I'm just not cut out to run. Like I'm, you know, almost 200 pounds at this point. Like I'm not cut out for long distance running. So I pretty much gave up on that, was nursing this injury, still lifting weights and all that. But it was a big feeling for me, that injury. And then fast forward to last August, out in LA, I link up with Venice Run Club and go out to one of their social runs. It's like a 4-mile run. At that point, I was kind of back into running. This is like a year and a half later after that injury. Was feeling good now, but still wasn't pushing anything over than like 3 miles at like probably a 10-minute pace. And go out to their social run, have a great time, meet some great people. The people who run that club, Aaron and Justin, are fantastic, like just amazing human beings. So at that point, meeting them, I'm like, all right, I'm stoked. I'm coming back for the next run. Like, when's the next run? Like, oh, it's this Saturday. We're doing a half marathon on the beach. And I was like, oh, fuck, dog, a half marathon? Like, they're like, it's going to be so fun. Like, come out. We'll go grab breakfast afterwards. And so I basically was like, all right, fuck it. I'll give it a shot. Like, we're just doing the boardwalk. So if I need to, I can just hop off, wait at the end point, anything like that. So roll out there, 8 a.m. on a Saturday, and kick off this half marathon, longest run I've done by a few miles. And the one prior to that was years ago. So I'm nervous, but just kind of taking it at my own pace, doing whatever, and end up finishing, holding like an 8:30 pace, stayed towards the front of the pack, and just like felt amazing. I was like, holy shit, dude, it's like 10 in the morning on a Saturday. We already ran a half marathon. Like, that's crazy. Cause at that point, like those like a half marathon seemed like such a big, like huge distance to run to me. And so I was just like extremely stoked on it. And then as I was telling you the other day at coffee, I was like, all right, running sick. Like, I'm coming back to BRC every week, and like getting back into running. And then with pretty much anything that I do in life, I kind of have that addict mentality. So right after that half marathon, I started thinking, all right, well, fuck it. I should do an ultra marathon. Like, I'll do a 50K. Like, that'll be dope. Call myself an ultra marathoner. That'll be cool. So I'm basically just like now at this point going around VRC, going to the 3 mile runs a few times each week, just kind of talking out my ass. Like, yeah, I think I'm going to do an ultra marathon here. Like, I've been looking at a few different ones. Like, yeah, just blowing smoke up my ass. And finally, this dude who I had met doing a shoot for that Rorik company, he finally is like, well, dude, if you want to do an ultra marathon, there's this really cool ultra marathon happening in March. It's a 340 mile relay ultra marathon through the desert out in Las Vegas. I won't mention the name of the race, but basically it was an invite only race. It was about 5 months away. And he told me, like, it's we have to apply, so no promises, but if we get in, like, you're definitely on the team. So I was like, dope, that's sick. So now that gave me one more thing to blow smoke up my ass about is, oh yeah, I'm looking into this ultra marathon through the desert, 340 miles, like multi-day. And then he calls me like 2 weeks later. He's like, dude, we got in. And so now, like, the reality hits is like, oh shit, dude, like in a few months, I'm gonna have to run this race with teammates counting on me to, and at the time, like, I'm seeing these dudes, Strava's posts, like, they're crushing me. Like, I had no business being on this team. And so, like, reality sits in, like, oh shit, I gotta start training. And so basically, like, for the next 5 months leading up to that race, I was living out of my van in San Diego at the time. And I just treated running like a fucking full-time job, like multi-runs a day, just like slowly building up, getting in the weight room, surfing a bunch out there as well. Like, I would do that to warm up and cool down, and just like every step of the way, just training my ass off over 5 months, to the point where, like, completely changed the type of runner I was. Like, could mob like 15 miles to like an 8:30 pace, and just like, yeah, completely like became the runner I wanted to be at that point, and ended up doing two marathons leading up to that race, and then races coming up in March. And basically throughout some drama that my team got caught up in, we didn't get to compete, and we got that news like 4 days before the race was supposed to happen. So I basically just like committed 5 months of my life to this race that was no longer an option, and was just crushed. And like,
right.
Yeah, I was just so like heartbroken over that. I was like, oh my God. Like, yeah, it was heartbreaking. And I just felt like I got cheated. Like, I put so much work into this thing that I was hoping to achieve, and like didn't get to even attempt it. So I was just feeling really shitty about it, and ended up coming back to Austin and just getting together with my friends. And I was like, yo, I feel like I got cheated on this race out there. Like, I put in so much work. Like, I know that I could, like, I know that I would have done it. And like, I want to prove that to myself. Like, I got robbed out of proving to myself that I was capable of achieving the goal I set out 5 months ago to achieve. And so basically, like, when you break down the math of that run, you have like 57 miles each. And it's a little different because it's not back to back, but total, you're running 57 miles, somewhere around that. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to run at least that. And then I do the math, figure out 100Ks, only few more miles than that. So I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna do this 100K, but I need a support crew, and like, are y'all down to just like clear a Saturday? We'll go drive out to Dripping Springs and we'll run it on some back roads, like take all day, grab some food after. And everyone was super down. My friend Keaton, she's a photographer, so she was gonna take some pictures of it. And then we basically planned a route, set a date for a week away the very next Saturday. And within that week, it basically snowballed to like, oh, like I'm going to take some pictures, to, oh, let's see if my friend who's a videographer wants to come out, he could get some cool shots, to let's do a whole 3-part documentary throughout this summer with 3 different 100K races. And like, I can't really even remember like the process of getting to that from there, but it was just like, let me ask my friend Moy if he wants to be a video, if he wants to come do some video for it, to like literally 3 days later, like, we're doing a full documentary. Let's go. We don't have any funding. Nobody knows how to make a documentary, but we're doing it. and so basically I like just went into planning the runs. We did the first one that following Saturday, the Hill Country 100, and that was just that initial one to get it over with, basically to like prove that I could do it and all of that. And so did that. We went out to Dripping Springs. We literally spray painted a line on the asphalt. That was our starting line. And then just took off, and whatever 62 miles from there was, like, that was our finish line. And so we planned the route going from Dripping Springs to Fredericksburg, which two just like little towns out in the Hill Country, beautiful back roads all the way through them. So it was the Hill Country 100K. And it was just kind of the accumulation of that 5 months of hard work and dedication, and like the process of seeing, you know, we had a full crew, a support van, we had a videographer, 2 photographers, like all within a week. It was super cool and like humbling to see that support come together so like just organically and naturally, and like through no other purpose than like achieving that goal. And like, I don't know, everyone basically just like the whole thing came together because everyone, one, wanted to support me and what I was doing, but also like everyone just wanted to be a part of something that they thought was going to be a really cool experience. And that was what fueled everyone into dropping what they were doing and spending 22 hours on a Saturday helping me gut through this initial 100K. And that, like, to this day, like, that's the coolest part of that race. It's like how organic and how just like raw it was. Like, everyone was just like so down because it was a shared experience that like none of us will ever forget that day. Like, it was cool.
One thing that I wanted to bring up that stuck out to me when you and I first connected is you mentioned how that whole experience of like, you know, the 340 mile race being on the books, you training for it, and then that being stripped away from you, it made you really think about like, why do I run? Why am I running? What is this about? I wanted you to kind of touch on that a little bit, because I thought that was powerful. And I think, you know, there are other areas of lives, of our lives, of other people's lives, of listeners, where they can maybe take that same type of experience and then apply this, like, you know, maybe I need to evaluate my intention of why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, just reflecting on what's driving the actions. Yeah, and so let me backtrack a bit. So basically, going into that run out in Los Angeles, it was like a big invite-only run. Like, all the teams get sponsors and like, it's really cool. And it was the first time I'd really been like getting hooked up with brands and shit, getting free stuff, like getting like being involved in like photo shoots and stuff for running. And like, it was a really cool experience. But it was also like, that kind of became what I was chasing in that race, was like, oh, like getting to work with these brands, getting posted on Instagram, like networking, like getting, yeah, just kind of the whole reason behind the run came, was like, became less about the run and more about like, you know, social media and content and all that stuff, and like ego about, oh, I'm doing this invite only run, like, blah, blah, blah. I'm working with these brands, like, they're sponsoring us, they're paying for all our stuff. Like, it was really like, that became like the whole mindset behind that run for me. It was like, oh, this is a great opportunity. Like, I'm going to get to network. Maybe I can get like some brand deals out of this, blah, blah, blah. And kind of like just chasing like that side of running, trying to monetize it and like basically like gain clout off of it, basically. So leading up to that run, like that had kind of taken over, and I'd never even really noticed that that had taken over as like the focal point. And then once the race got pulled away, I remember cause I'd been talking about this race for 5 months. Like the one thing I was dreading the most was like just that morning where I had to wake up, make some coffee and just go out onto the patio and one after another, just call my mom and tell her why I wasn't doing the race anymore. And then hang up with her, call my best friend and tell her why I'm not doing the race anymore. And like, go back and just tell all these people, like, this is a situation, I'm not getting to compete. And just like by the last one, just like full tears in my eyes, of like having to tell these people that I wasn't going to get to do this thing that I'd been talking about for so long. And then basically like once that ended, it was like, okay, so trying to word this correctly, but basically I was like, okay, I've like checked in with the people I really care about and the people who are really involved in my life. And I've checked in with them and let them know what's going on. So why am I still like so beat up over this race and like not getting to do it? And like basically ended up going down to San Diego from Los Angeles, cleared my schedule for a week and just kind of sat with that for a little bit. Cause like I was embarrassed about it, like all that stuff. And I was like embarrassed having to like call my friends and tell them like, oh, we didn't get to do this because of this and all that. And then like one, like, of course they're all just the most loving people ever. None of them, like it doesn't affect anything with them. And then, moving past that, it's like, okay, well then why do I still feel so shitty about it? And like, feel like this just like ripped away so much for me. Like I can still go out and run tomorrow and like I can take pictures of myself and like I don't really like, what did I lose here? Like why is there this like hole that's sitting here that I can't figure out where it's coming from? And so I went down to San Diego and just like spent a week fucking taking mushrooms and surfing all day and just like riding, reading and just like sitting in a lot of thought on that question of like, why is it affecting me so hard that I don't get to compete in this race? And like the reality of it was because I wanted to show everyone else. I wanted to show Instagram. I wanted that I did this race and, oh, look at what I'm doing and blah, blah, blah. And like, look at these brands that I'm working with and all of this and just, you know, clout chasing basically. And I realized like that was kind of the reason that I was so bummed out about this was like, I felt like I was missing out on opportunities that would have came after the race. But then I was like, why, like, what, like, why can't I go make those opportunities for myself? Why am I relying on this race to create opportunities for myself when I have this fucking phrase tattooed on my hand? Like, right. I can go make this shit happen by myself. Like, I don't need this basically. And yeah, it was just like a big realization of like, I was putting the power in other people's hands when it came to like this thing that I love doing. And, yeah. So that kind of led me to, I feel like I'm jumping all over the place, but that kind of led me to like the realization of like running for myself again. And then getting back to that experience I had had at that Houston marathon, getting the push for Ainsley's Angels and realizing like, okay, I want to run for myself and I want to run for other people, like to help other people basically. And so kind of reflecting on that throughout that week. And yeah, that just kind of sparked the snowball that brought us into planning that next 100K, starting Miles for Moms, and you know where we are at now. But yeah,
so you started Miles for Moms after the first 100K, or when did you actually realize like, okay, so now I've checked the box, I ran that 100K, I proved to myself that I could do that, So that was really like, that was kind of for you in a sense. And of course you had your crew with you. So beautiful experience through and through. But then there's the question of, okay, well, how do I use running to serve other people? And is that where what was born?
Yeah. So what I was left with after that first 100K was like, okay, this is such a cool experience. Like, we put together this whole project that I'm super stoked on, all this stuff. Like, and I proved to myself that I could do it. But at the end of the day, I was still just kind of like, I mean, like, I went right to Instagram, posting all the pictures, like right to that. And I was like, how is this any different than what I was doing before? I was like, I'm still just like kind of clocking miles and boosting my own ego through sharing Instagram posts and like shit like that, kind of like looking for validation in certain ways, and still just like kind of in this very selfish pursuit. Like, yes, I'm testing my boundaries. Yes, I'm learning lessons through this, but you can do that without a social media page, you know? So for I was sure. like this pursuit still feels very shallow. And so I was sitting with that, with on the horizon, these next 200Ks, this whole project. And I'm like, fuck, like, I want to actually like make an impact with this. And I was just thinking back to Ainsley's Angels and that amazing organization, what they do for running, and then thinking about specifically Sebastian and Garia from that race. And just like, I want to like, that proves that you can, that like your running ability can have a positive impact on people who aren't just you. How can I take that and move forward myself? Because like, again, I can't, you know, push for that organization every single run, but you know, there's gotta be something along the lines that I can do like that. And again, like, I kind of can't really recall how that bit snowballed into the idea for Miles for Moms, but that was like the first spark of that idea, was that Houston Marathon, and reflecting off of the feelings that came after that first 100K. And then at that point, I was like, I think I want to start a nonprofit. And then, so I guess I'll touch on Miles for Moms real quick, but it was basically like, these ultra marathons are kind of already acting as like their own campaign. Like, you know, you kind of can post about it leading up to, you can post your training, and like, it's very easy content for people to follow along with, and like support. And you see just like tons of outreach on support for anyone who's like taking on these endeavors. And so I was kind of like, well, you're already almost doing like the advertising and marketing side for a fundraiser through just the training process of an ultra marathon and documenting it on social media. So I was like, why not actually create fundraisers through these ultra marathons? And then kind of like, that was where the idea for the concept came from. And then I was just kind of, again, reflecting on like, okay, now what do I want to do with that? And yeah, it just was like, well, if I want to get behind, if I'm going to like create a nonprofit and get behind this full-heartedly, like, it has to be something that's very important to myself. So I was like, okay, I want to help single moms, because when I was 14, my dad passed away and left my mom by herself to raise three kids. And just, again, she's a gangster. Like, she just, I watched her work so hard to support us in all that time. And just like watching her go through that, like, I have such a soft spot in my heart for single mothers. And so I wanted to do something that would help me help single mothers. And so the idea behind Miles for Moms is that we run ultra marathons and or marathons or whatever, and use them as fundraising campaigns to help individual mothers at like a street level. So basically we find a mom who is, you know, just kind of barely hanging on, like barely keeping her head above water financially. And then we're able to come in with the results of these fundraisers and provide them with financial support. And then also the other aspect of that is that we get to provide them with love, because that was another thing that I noticed after my dad passed away was there was this big outpour of support for us a month, 2 months after. And then 8 months down the line, when you're still just like feeling those effects and you're still struggling, there's not a whole lot of people left. Mm-hmm. And so the other aspect is just like letting these moms know that we see what you're going through. You're not forgotten about. And like, we love and support you. And like, we see that you for the hero that you are, essentially raising kids these days as a single mom. And so that's another big part of it too, is just like not letting these moms and their struggles be forgotten about.
Yeah, it's an incredible mission. And it's incredible how, you know, specifically your journey with running has gone from like very kind of like ego driven, all about you, to like, let me figure out how I can make this as little about me as possible. And, yeah, you know, serve as many people as possible along the way. And I think, was it you who said to me that you feel like running is kind of like an art form in itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think of it in that way, especially like trail running and all of that. Like, I always, because like, if there's like a rocky ledge coming up on a trail, like two runners can approach that ledge so differently. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, you kind of create the art. It's an expression of each individual runner, the way that they run and the way that they choose to run and like how they attack runs. And that's kind of how I look at it in some aspects for sure. And then the actual like creative side of putting together these runs was a really good creative outlet as well. Just planning the routes and all that.
Yeah, no, I love that mindset on it. And so I always ask my guests, if you had to leave the listeners with a piece of advice, you know, to the person who maybe is at a point in their life where they're not really liking how they're living, or they're not super happy with their circumstance, what would you tell them?
I would say that like step one is just like change your perception of your situation in whatever way you can to make it a productive one. Like, we talked about it when we were getting coffee, like a 9-to-5 is not a death sentence. It's what you do outside of the 9-to-5 that determines your future. So like, if you're working a 9-to-5 right now and you don't like that job, that's not an issue. The issue is if you're working that 9-to-5 and you're not working on anything else that fuels you up inside. And it doesn't have to be a business either. Like, these days we're so like, oh, start a business. Yo, start painting or like just like going on hikes or doing something, working out, like whatever it is, like just start doing small things for yourself where you're taking control back in aspects of your life. And then that just like almost inevitably snowballs into creating a better life for yourself. So like putting time into things that fuel you is going to lead you to like where you want to be, I guess. I always say like if you're trying to meet cool people, go do cool shit. Like, if you're trying to like be someone who you want to be, or if you're trying to create someone who you want to be, then like do the shit that you want yourself to be doing, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense. There's this like concept that I've heard of, I think it's called be, do, have, and people get it backwards. They think like, when I have this, I'll be able to do this and then I'll be happy. But it really should be like, be the type of person you want to be. And as a result, those other things, the happiness will flow into your life as a result.
And I think like a big part of that is actually reflect on what you want to do. You know, like don't, like the whole concept of kind of my journey is like, you decide what happens. Like, you don't, like, input from others is important, but like the big decisions like need to be off of what's in your gut. And so like, I tell people a lot, because with ultra marathons, you can kind of like get put on this little pedestal of like, oh man, like he must really have his shit together. And it's like, no, I just run a lot. Like, you know, it's not like this does not mean that. And like, just because you're not running doesn't mean that you're any less of a person, like any less, like that you're working any less hard. Like you're just working on a thing. So it's like, reflect on what you want out of life, establish your actual goals of what you want to do. And then at that point, you basically just have to come down and peg and be like, okay, my goals are this. So my priorities on a day-to-day basis should be that. And if these are my priorities, then this is what my actions should look like. And then that kind of takes care of like 85%, but it's actually like knowing what those goals are and what you're working towards. And right now, if all it is you want to lose some weight and like get outside more, then do that and just like, like follow that, like as far as it takes you. And then I don't know, I feel like I'm just kind of rambling at this point, but for me, like everything that has come for me has been just from taking like one step and then like allowing that to snowball.
Yeah.
And like, not all days are good days, but the good days will come back around the corner. So
for sure. Well, Keith, man, I've enjoyed the conversation once again. I really appreciate you for joining me.
Yeah, dude. Thank you so much for having me and giving me a platform to talk about this stuff. So yeah, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah. And to the listeners,
I wasn't too all over the place.
No, dude, you were great. Seriously. It was awesome. And to the listeners, thank you guys for joining us on another episode of the Walk On Mentality podcast, and we will see you on the next one.